For moments crowded with laughter, listen to this show. Then you'll be happier after when off to work you go. All the cares throughout the day will dwindle away, and you will say the day is happier after the show.
I send this to Sparky so he has to do all the editing, so I don't have to do real work.
That's great. Here, I just did a podcast. You edit it.
Yep, exactly. That's how it's always been. I've never been the technology guy. When when I did the I don't know if you ever listened to the Valiant podcast I did with Martin, but we did that for a long time. And I kind of dabbled in a few other things on Nerdy Legion. Like there's quite a few podcasts that I got going, and then ended up like it's always been hard for me. Like it's easier now, but like my son's special needs, so like it was really hard to commit time to doing a podcast. And when I started trying to do stuff on my own, when the Valiant podcast was starting to lag because like the enthusiasm was dwindling with myself and Martin. And, like, it was getting difficult. And I knew that at some point, like, we were going to get tired of doing it, and I was going to be high and dry on a podcast, which is exactly what ended up happening. But so when I started doing my own thing, I just sent it to Sparky, and he edited it for me. Like, he was enthusiastic about, like, getting involved in podcasts, but he's like, I'm never going to do one. But he would edit mine. Then he started doing one with his cousin. And then somebody else hit him up about joining on some, like, sci-fi books podcast. And I was like, hey, if you ever want to do another podcast, do one with me. That's basically how we started doing it.
Martin actually lives, like, 30 miles down the road from me.
Yeah, it's funny. Small world. I think Jonathan Sanchez is in your neighborhood approximately somewhere.
I don't think I'm familiar with him.
He was one of the big Valiant guys. Yeah, I know, like, you, Martin, Chris Parton, I believe, is down in that neck of the woods.
He's in this area.
Yeah, I got nobody up here. You know what's really funny, though? So, where I lived in California, I lived in Santa Clarita. So, the first comic shop, well, not the first, the comic shop I went to before moving to Maine. And I didn't go there regularly. I wasn't subscribing or anything, but it was called Brave New World. Andy, who worked for Valiant, ended up buying that comic shop. So, like, basically my old comic shop ended up getting bought by somebody that I knew from Valiant, who I became friends with, and he was in my fantasy football league for a few years.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I was, you probably knew this thing, because if you were around with the Valiant stuff, someone actually threw my name out to Dinesh. And he ended up sending me a box of, like, all the gold books.
Oh, nice.
And the oversized hardcover of X-01 and Harbinger 1. And then the solid black, like, it was just, I don't remember. It was just like a Valiant, like a teaser book or something. And it was signed by, like, all of the creative.
Yeah.
Like, anybody that had anything to do in the office, it was signed by them. And I still to this day have no idea how I got this box.
it was crazy back in those days. And that's what was so addictive about the Valiant community was the fan base was so rabid but supportive. It was rabid in a positive way. Like everybody was so into it and so supportive of each other for so long. And the company, when it was run by the people who founded it, it was very much supportive of those people who were very grassroots driving it. And, you know, it when DMG got involved, it just got diluted and went to shit, basically. But, you know, Martin and I did the Valiant podcast for, like, 3 years. We hit over 100 episodes of that before we kind of flagged on it. And at one point, Dinesh ended up sending me a box of comics. And, you're lucky if your box is packed well, because the main thing I ever noticed about when they send books is they packed them like crap. So I got four variant covers of, gosh, what book was it? It was Britannia. And they were valuable. And they were beat up pretty well. If they hadn't been beat up, they probably would have been worth like $800 to me.
Wow.
I still was able to sell them to a big-time collector that knew, like, how to do, like, pressing and all that kind of stuff to, like, get comics fixed that were damaged. I sold them to him for, like, $200. And then I used all that money to buy a bunch of books because I had sold my Valiant collection when we bought our house. And so I bought a whole bunch of the collection again. And then, like, I, you know, after that, I kind of started flagging off on Valiant, and I ended up, like, selling the physical copies and buying digital copies of a lot of the stuff. But yeah, progress is how it is. It definitely, like, once Dinesh was gone, like, it just kind of ripped the heart out of it. And I don't know what they do anymore. Like, I don't keep up with it because, yeah, like, I'd rather keep that, like, that golden era of, like you were saying, get into EXO. So, like, when I first got into Valiant, I was able to get Archer and Armstrong and Bloodshot from the first issue. So that those are one of the first four titles launched. It was EXO, Archer and Armstrong, Bloodshot, and Harbinger. And EXO was first, and I don't know the order after that. But so Bloodshot and Archer and Armstrong were the first two I got into. I got a few issues of each, and then I went back and got all that I could because they were having that sell at my comic shop. And then when I really dug those, eventually they did the Harbinger Wars crossover that was Bloodshot and Harbinger, so I got into Harbinger. And then I got into EXO, but I was able to go buy, like, the first 19 issues of EXO on eBay for really cheap. And, man, there is nothing better than getting into something new and then being able to pick up a whole bunch of it for cheap and then binge on and it just be so good. And that's exactly what Valiant was.
Yeah, my LCS was able to get me, so around 18 of EXO. So, you know, we're talking less than 60, 70 bucks total. They were able to, in their back issues, pull everything together. I bought a full collection and kept, you know, everything Valiant was on my list. So, and that's one thing about me. For whatever reason, I'm either all in or I'm not.
Yeah.
And I think I think you saw that post the other day that I'm like, you know what? I don't have to buy every Spider-Man book to read Amazing Spider-Man.
Exactly. But something like Star Wars, you've learned is worth you being all in on. And that's the difference, is figuring out what's right and what's not, you know?
That's true.
When I started dabbling in the original run of Valiant, VH1, my comic shop, Coast City Comics in Portland, which if you ever come to Maine, like, they're awesome, he had a quarter bin section. And I remember talking to him, and he told me flat out, the quarter bin section isn't financially worth the space it takes. Like, they don't make enough money off of it to actually be worth that amount of space it took in their comic shop. And it wasn't like it was the biggest section, but it just goes to show you, like, I mean, they're in downtown Portland. It's the most expensive place to be in Maine. But so I got hundreds of VH1 books for a quarter a pop. And once I got literally everything I could out of those bins, he had a bunch of long boxes down in his basement of other VH1 books. And he sold those to me, so, like, they were $1 a piece. But then he would, like, however many I got, he would knock some money off of it. So, like, if I got, like, 80 books, he'd probably sell it to me for 60 bucks. So he was a big part of the reason why I was able to build up. I at one point actually had the entire collection of VH1, which is over 600 books.
Wow.
And luckily, like, I got all the expensive or hard-to-get ones before there started being movie news and stuff and, like, the books started getting expensive. But it was all because I was even able to start on it because of Coast City Comics, because of Tristan. That was, like, that's one of my favorite collecting experiences. And that's the only time that I spent a lot of effort and money collecting something. And I definitely made a profit off of selling it because I was able to sell complete runs of these books to people that were looking for them. And it was all because I made friends and knew people too, but yeah, that was a heck of an experience. Like, I don't think I'll ever, ever hit on something like that again, you know?
Do you remember the Valiant artifacts that they kept on talking about?
A little bit, if we're thinking of the same thing. Like, I know Robert Venditti had his artifacts.
Yes. Yeah. I have one of those.
What did you get?
So when he was... Yeah, he lives in South Carolina somewhere, or Georgia. Yep. He lives in Georgia, and that's close to, you know, within a couple hours from where I live. So we have a little small, it's grown quite big, but South Carolina Comic-Con, which is in Martin's hometown.
Yeah.
And he was going to be there, and this was right when I was in my, you know, the height of my Valiant stage. And so we'd been talking back and forth on Twitter, and he... Yeah, you know, I he asked me what the first Valiant book I bought, and I said, well, it was your number 8, you know, X-O Man of War 18. And he happened to have a print of that cover, which is not a, it's not a great print. It's the picture that's got Eric and I want to say it's Harada on the other side.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of staring at each other, like half faces. So it's not the most, you know, gorgeous cover you've ever seen, but that was just my first. And so I bought that print, obviously, and he wrote at the bottom, "You never forget your first," which I thought was hilarious. And then he said, "I'm not sure if you know what this is." He says, but I do these things called Valiant Artifacts, and these are one of a kind memorabilia. And it was a handwritten page of his notes for that issue.
That's really awesome. Yeah.
So I've got them framed side by side, and I don't actually have the picture up now. It's in storage at the moment. But I'm thinking about, she moved some of her stuff out into the family room, so I've got some more room in the bedroom. I'm thinking about pulling it out and sticking it up again.
You gonna have comics up in your bedroom? I'm lucky I have an office.
Oh wow! No, I've got like right above my bed, I've got my all-time favorite Superman cover, which is Superman Volume 2, Number 59, a replica of Action Comics Number 1. I've got that beautiful 1,000 covers of Action Comics to the side. I don't know if you ever seen that big poster they did at the anniversary issue.
Send me a picture of it later, though.
I will. It's got every, like the covers are like half an inch thumbnails.
Yeah.
So in order to see them, you really have to kind of get up and close. But it's got every single cover A from Action Comics Number 1 to Action Comics 1000.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so that's over here. And then my bookshelf is in the bedroom of all my trades. So
yeah, one of the things when we bought a house is my wife's an artist. So she mm-hmm. needed her space to be able to have a studio to like work on art. And I said, I need my own space. Like my whole life, I've never had like my own living situation. I lived at home. I lived with her and a roommate and like roommates. And then we had our own house. But still, like I've never had my own space up until we got this house. We never had enough space for me to have like my own space. So, like, I mean, back in the Valiant days, do you remember the big Armor Hunters? They did the giant connecting cover. Like,
yes.
So I had gotten of those, and I had actually gotten out of collecting Valiant before I even was able to put them up, and I sold them.
Mm.
So, like, getting a house, like, I need to have my own space. So, we got a house where I have, like, I don't have a door in my office, but I have, like, my own area. And I've slowly been ordering the BCW comic frames and going around the border of my walls.
Yeah, and I've seen those pictures.
Yeah, it's great. Like one of my favorite thing is I got all 13 issues of the TMNT City at War run, and from the original Mirage run, and got all those covers up there. And I think once I get the border all the way around, the next thing I'm gonna do, and I have all these already, but I'm gonna put up all of the Marvel Comic Presents. That is the Weapon X run,
because
they're all Barry Windsor Smith covers, and they're fantastic.
They're beautiful.
Yeah. But, it's great to be able to do that stuff. I was going to say, Martin has a Robert Venditti artifact. He told me about it years ago. And once again, like, you know, locally, like, you know, he always comes all the things. And I forget the story exactly, but I believe Martin basically said that Venditti prompted him to ask for it, because like you have to know what you're asking for, but Venditti like prompted him to ask for it so he could give it to him. But it's so cool to make those kind of connections. Like I don't have a lot of connections in comics. Like there's no cons up where I live, and I can't afford to go to anywhere else. But like one friend I've made is J.K. Woodward. I've went to one convention in Maine. Coast City Comics did one convention. And I met J.K. Woodward there, and he's mostly done Star Trek and some Doctor Who stuff for IDW. But he did one cover for TMNT. He's a big TMNT fan, and I've been friends with him for years. Like, I hit him up to ask him about what I should listen to of David Bowie when Bowie died. Because I never really listened to Bowie, but I was like, I should, you know? And he didn't, like, send me a list of stuff. He said, call me and get a notepad. So I called him. And he, like, was talking to me on the phone, telling me all this stuff to listen to, you know? But, It's so cool to have that. Like, I came up with this, like, dream commission that was just perfect. I had been bouncing this idea in my head, and I finally got down to what I wanted to, and I sent it. Like, I said, hey, I want this. And it's, you know, the broken bat cover where Bane is breaking Batman's back?
Yep, so, $4.97.
Yeah, so, like, I had always loved that. That was one of the Batman comic arcs that was like the regular comic, not something that was made for trade, like, you know, I'm gonna blank home. I just had it in my head. The long
Nightfall.
Yeah, Nightfall is that. What was the other one? The one that goes through all the holidays.
Oh, that's the Long Halloween.
Long Halloween. Okay, so I was right. Okay. So, like, Long Halloween was clearly written for trade. Like, it wasn't the individual issues. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know they release as individual issues, but, like, it's pretty obvious, you know, that it was, like, meant to be this concise thing. So Nightfall is the only Batman thing that I got all the trades and I loved it. But I always loved that cover of Bane breaking Batman's back. And when they did the Batman TMNT crossover, so I started getting these ideas of, like, okay, I could do something with that, but do it a little bit differently. I was like, okay, I could do, like, Rocksteady breaking Batman's back. It'll be, like, crossing over, right? But then the TMNT issue came out where Rocksteady and Bebop killed Donatello. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. So I had him do Rocksteady breaking Donatello's back, which is exactly what they did, but in the vein of that cover, and it's fantastic. I got that. I got the comic, you know, my comic shop that closed, like, when he had one. I told him, like, if you come across this, like, let me know, and I'll definitely buy it from you. Bought the cover from him. The best part of the story is, I show this to my son. Like, he had already, of course, like, I had the commission up on the wall. I showed him the commission. I showed him the comic book and said, see, this is done, like, in this style. And he was, like, I don't know, 5 then? So he goes and he draws a picture of Cheetah breaking Wonder Woman's back. And I was like, that's just the best thing ever. Like, he saw all this and he wanted to do it himself. Like, I have three pieces of art. I have Bane breaking Batman's back, I have Rocksteady breaking Donatello's back, and I have my son drawing Cheetah breaking Wonder Woman's back as a 5-year-old, you know?
And that's probably the most precious of all of them.
Yeah, it's close, you know. Oh, man, but...
So what's with your Beastie Boy kick?
Oh, man, so... I've listened to the Beastie Boys my whole life. Like, License to Ill came out when I was, like, 3. So, I mean, I wasn't listening to it then, but I remember when my older sister...
I'm so old.
I just have a lot of old friends. My older sister, when she was in, like, junior high, high school age, like, I remember her listening to License to Ill, because I remember the songs Brass Monkey, Girls, and Fight for Your Right to Party, right?
Yeah.
Those are the three that stood out to me at that time, because, like, as, you know, whatever her age was, like, that was what she listened to. So, I was too young then, but, like, those songs, like, always kind of stuck with me. And then, you know, I get older... My kind of prime age was when Hello Nasty came out. I was 15 years old when Hello Nasty came out. And I never actually had Hello Nasty at that time, but they released The Sounds of Science right after that. That was an anthology.
Mm-hmm.
I got The Sounds of Silence, and I listened to that so much. And I never had any of the individual albums at that point, but, like, I listened to them a ton. But I wasn't really into hip-hop then. And it was, like, I was, as I kind of got into my own in music, like, the first thing I got into was punk. And I was listening to, like, Rancid and Less Than Jake, and, like, my senior year, I remember I went to the Warped Tour, like, right after I graduated, and Rancid and Less Than Jake were both performing. It was Rancid and Pennywise were headlining. But, like, I never really got deeper into punk music than that. Like, I kept on looking for stuff, and I just, like, I wasn't finding stuff that really grabbed me. And then I started hanging out with one of my cousin's friends who was really into hip-hop. And he made his own music. And then I started working with a kid I had went to high school with. He made music with a collective of other people. I introduced my one friend to them. They all became friends, and my one friend started making music with them also. So they were all, like, there were rappers, there were DJs, there were producers, like, they were all making music together. And they got me into underground hip hop, which then led to me getting into old school hip hop, which led to me developing, you know, like a great affection for like De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest. And Beastie Boys was always one of those that was mainstream enough that it was easy to overlook them until they caught my attention. But when I went back and listened to like Paul's Boutique, a lot of their music in that has been like referenced by the underground hip hop stuff that I listen to. Like there's a line, gotcha. In Paul's Boutique, I'm a writer, a poet, a genius. I know it. I don't buy Chiba. I grow it. But then Sage Francis flipped that line, basically the same line, but he says, I don't buy Chiba or Moet because he's straight edge. So, like, you know, he also doesn't grow Chiba and smoke it. But anyways, so, like, hitting those lines and finding them, like, from the underground hip-hop I was listening to and then finding them in old-school hip-hop was just, like, blowing my mind when I was that age. So, you know, then the years pass, and I get to where, like, finding new music is more difficult and, I've definitely, like, I've realized that I've outgrown a lot of the music that I really loved because it doesn't resonate with me emotionally like it used to. So, you know, it's like I'm always kind of poking around old stuff. And then for some reason recently, I started thinking about the Beastie Boys a lot more again. And, you know, it's like I've seen stuff come out like, years ago, they had a DVD that was the Criterion Collection that was all their music videos. And I had that years ago. You know, they came out with the Beastie Boys book. I was like, I'm going to get that one of these days, but I just kind of never got around to it. And then they released the documentary they did on Apple TV. And we have Apple TV for free for a year because I bought my wife an iPad for Christmas. So I was like, okay, I'll watch this. Before I even watched it, like, I started listening to them again a little bit and was like, man, this is really good. I watched that documentary and I was just head over heels in love with the Beastie Boys. Not only stuff like learning more about MCA, who just like everything I've heard about him is just like a fantastic person and like the kind of person that should be inspiring to all of us. But then also seeing a lot of the creativity that was behind even some of the music that I kind of don't think of as highly of, like Licensed to Ill, like all the songs I just mentioned, Girls, Brass Monkey, and Fight for Your Right to Party are like awful songs content wise you know, like awful examples of what you should be. But then learning stuff like one of the songs on that album, I forget which one, I'll have to, like, I watched the documentary once, I want to watch it again, but MCA had heard about different artists looping, doing like tape loops, and the other guys, you know, the two surviving members mentioned going to his apartment, and he had this big reel-to-reel tape player. He had two mic stands, and he had this tape going from the reel to reel around one mic stand, around the other mic stand, then back onto the reel. And he looped tape that way, all just because he had heard of it, and then he wanted to try. And that kind of stuff is just, like, it blows my mind, like, the creativity. And you listen to this stuff, and, like, when you dig in and really hear the creativity in the music, like, it's easy to look at them as, like, a pop act. You know, they're popular. They're rap, but, like, you know, and yes, they're influential, but, you know, are they pop music or have they been something more than that? And, like, digging into more info on them, man, there's so much more than that. And it just, like, it hit me right in the vein of what really matters to me. And I've been listening to them nonstop in the last few weeks. I got the Beastie Boys book and I started reading that. I watched the documentary. I got the Criterion Collection DVD of their videos. I've been showing it to my son. My son has been loving the Beastie Boys stuff I've been showing him. I showed him the video for Body Movin', for Intergalactic, and for 3 MCs and 1 DJ. And I love that his favorite one is 3 MCs and 1 DJ because it's just them all being goofy and performing. And plus it's Mixmaster Mike, who's freaking fantastic. Yes, I don't know. It's been fantastic, and I just like... something hit me the right way, and like I've always listened to the Beastie Boys and I've always liked the Beastie Boys, but now, like, not only do I respect them immensely more as artists, I expect them immensely more as people from what I've seen. So that's why, like,
I gotcha. I was just curious because I think sometime after Hello Nasty they lost me, and I need to go back and listen to some of the later stuff.
And see, I haven't even listened to much of that yet, so I just today started listening to the Five Boroughs. And, like, I mean, I've heard some of it before, and even listened to, like, a few songs recently. But yeah, I mean, like after Hello Nasty was, it was kind of a different world for them. Like, you know, stuff spread out a little bit more.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, To the Five Boroughs is definitely good. I think they go back a little more to their roots of not worrying about being as like radio friendly, because they definitely get a little bit more profane in their music. But it's good. And then I haven't listened past that, but I know that one of their albums after that is like an instrumental album. But I mean, you go back and listen to all of their albums like after License to Ill, and they have like such a diverse mix of stuff, like instrumental songs, hardcore punk songs, like all kinds of stuff like that. It's amazing what they do.
Yeah, the thing about them was, you know, License to Ill, very popular, very, very radio-esque. And then the follow-up album, Paul's Boutique, not as much. I mean, there was one or two songs that could be on the radio. And then Hello Nasty kind of went, and it, like, I don't even think Hey Ladies was a radio-worthy song, but it was.
Freaking cowbell in it.
and then from there, it was like, well, we just don't care anymore. I don't care if our songs get the radio. And I was just, it was like a weird, you know, growing up, because, you know, well, I was a teenager when that License to Ill came out. I wasn't three. damn, I'm old.
You were 18.
It was so bizarre to hear, being a teenager, being that young, I didn't appreciate it as much as I do now.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. Is like it's hard to appreciate. So, like, you change over age, and to be able to go back and listen to something you listened to as a teenager and see it differently is freaking amazing.
Like, I absolutely despised Paul's Boutique when it came out. Just, I was like, coming off of License to Ill, which like almost every single song was a hit, and, you know, and then what the heck? And now Paul's Boutique is my favorite Beastie Boy album.
So good.
By far.
Yeah. And then after that, you had, Check Your Head. And then you had, Ill Communication, which I think Ill Communication might've been, their, I don't know, it's hard to say, was it Ill Communication or was it Hello Nasty that was their pinnacle? I think Hello Nasty like resonated more popularly in ways. Like, I mean, Body Movin' and Intergalactic, like, nobody doesn't know those songs.
Oh yeah.
But Ill Communication, same thing, but there were so many good songs. And there was the song they did with Q-Tip, which when I got the Sounds of Science anthology, that was the song that blew my mind. I hadn't listened to Tribe Called Quest yet at that point. So hearing that song with Q-Tip was just like, it was so good. And, you know, it was, I was in high school. Then it was probably a couple years later that I really started getting introduced to De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest. And
3 Feet High and Rising, all-time favorite rap album.
It makes me so upset that you can't find any of that stuff, because they aren't publishing any of it because of the sample laws. And it's all because of digital music that is creating the barriers with the sample laws. They won't pay them the money to get the rights for the samples, because when digital music started becoming prevalent, it's not covered under the original stuff they paid for, basically. So it's super frustrating. Yeah. And if you ever come across any of those original De La Soul albums, like, get them and sell, and like, get them for me. Like, I want them so bad. I don't have any of the CDs because I went away from CDs because I thought I'd always be able to get it, you know? I don't have any of their CDs. I would love their records, but those are going for like hundreds of dollars a piece.
I've got the CD for 3 Feet High and Rising somewhere in this house. I'll if I can find it, because my CDs are in boxes. I burned all my CDs off, and I've got them on my, you know, my iPad, my iTunes, whatever. Mm-hmm. But if I can dig that out, I'll send it to you, because I don't need it.
I'll trade you something for it too. I'll give you something nice. You know me. I just explained this all to you. I always exceed expectations.
I have a challenge for you though.
Yep.
I have some homework.
Okay.
You probably have never heard of this group before. Let's
try me.
Me Phi Me. M E P H I M E, or Phi as in the Greek symbol. Yeah. I need you to find, like, maybe YouTube the album if it's on YouTube. I need you to give that a listen. They were a one and done album, and it's probably my second favorite rap album behind 3 Feet High and Rising.
All right. So am I hearing that you're a hip hop head?
I am everything but country. And when I say everything but country, that includes classical, jazz, opera, rock, right. Classic rock,
so
hip hop.
Are you saying you don't listen to Johnny Cash?
If it's on the, if Johnny Cash is on the radio, I do not change the channel. No.
You should. So first of all, you should listen to the American recordings that he did. All of them. There's many of them. They were done like later in his career with Rick Rubin, who you will know as the guy who helped get the Beastie Boys off the ground and then took advantage of them. And I have a little less respect for him now. But the American recordings. Like, do you have Spotify or whatever? Like, what do you use for music?
We use the Apple iTunes, whatever, iMusic or whatever it is. Yeah,
check out just check out American recordings. The first four volumes were done before he died. Any volume after that was stuff he had recorded before he died, obviously, but was released after he died. But there's some very, very good stuff in those posthumous volumes, too. But that will change your mind on Johnny Cash. And as far as country goes, so Johnny Cash, also Willie Nelson, Redheaded Stranger, listen to that album. I defy you to not be impressed by it with what you're saying about music otherwise. Country, it's all about finding the right thing. Just like is with rap, honestly. Like, it either resonates with you or it doesn't, but there's good stuff in everything. We are definitely going to be podcasting again. So no joke, like, hold on, I dropped my headset. No joke, I went into planning to record with you thinking, all I want to talk about is Beastie Boys, but Glenn isn't going to want to talk about Beastie Boys. We're talking about Beastie Boys. And also, by the way, I'm still recording, so this is what we call an After Dark section of the podcast. So this will also be released. Yes. Okay, so we're going to have to record again. And apparently we're going to have to talk about hip-hop. And whatever else you want to challenge me to listen to, and I might think it's about some stuff for you.
I will warn you, my hip-hop pretty much stops at the end of the 80s.
That's fine with me. I'll give you...
Very very little 90s, very little 2000s.
Oh, yeah. I started listening to hip-hop in... Okay, let's see. Now I got to think. Okay, I'm 36. I started listening to hip-hop. See, the problem was is that when I started listening to hip-hop, I didn't listen to mainstream stuff. Like, I've never been a big fan of mainstream stuff. But I'll we'll text. We'll discuss some stuff, and I'll challenge you some stuff you haven't listened to, and I want you to challenge me with some music I haven't listened to, and we'll end up doing a music podcast at some point. So, all right, you're my new podcast partner. There we go. Glenn is now a regular podcaster. As that happens.
Who would have thunk it?
You know what's funny? So, like, you listen to Nerdy Legion podcast, right?
Yes, I do.
So, I don't podcast on Nerdy Legion anymore because the one I do with Sparky, like, we split off from that because it just kind of needed to be something different. But, of the Nerdy Legion podcast, so my cousin Mike does the wrestling one. That basically is rooted in me getting them started because it was Ronnie and another guy whose name we won't mention because nobody likes him. They wanted to do a wrestling podcast, and Martin and I jumped in, and I pushed them to do it. And I was the one on that first episode of that podcast, like, getting them going, basically. And then I was the one that said, hey, you need to get my cousin Mike on here. And now, after all this time, like, it is just my cousin's podcast. The DC podcast that Ronnie and Aaron do started from me starting one with them because I wanted to talk about Rebirth, but I couldn't keep to it regularly, so at a certain point, they wanted to keep doing it. I handed it over to them. They made it their own thing. Quite a few of the podcasts on there were like that. Like, it was people, even other ones, like it was people that Martin and I talked to on Twitter that we got to do something, and then suddenly they're podcasters. And so many of them said, I'm not a podcaster. And eventually they became podcasters. That happened, so.
No, I haven't listened to much of them. The only one I listened to is just, I guess, the main Nerdy Legion podcast with Nick and Martin.
Yeah.
Where they talk about absolutely nothing, and it's the most enjoyable 2 hours of my day.
Yeah. And see, that started totally different. That was when Martin had the idea to start, and that was totally Martin's idea. It was going to be like a panel podcast each time, and they were going to do like different people every time. And man, Nick and Martin settled into their groove, and like I haven't listened in a long time, but I see how it resonates with people, man. And they're doing their thing, and that's exactly what podcasting should be. It's just you're having fun. And if people want to listen, they listen. And if they don't, they don't. Who cares? Like, look at Mike Myers. He doesn't give a damn if anybody listens to his podcast. He does them because he wants to talk to people. And,
yeah.
You know, let me tell you, like, I am sure I get way less listeners than Mike does. I don't care. Like, it's just about talking to people. I was this close to dropping podcasting altogether when we had this big gap, like with all this stuff, crazy stuff going on in the world. Sparky got sick and he had like 2 months where he couldn't record. And I was this close to just like, I almost gave my mic to my cousin and said, here, you use this because you'll actually put it to use. And I'm just done. And then finally, Sparky got better. We did a podcast and I said, you know what? I missed this. And it kept me in it, you know? It's just about having fun. That's all it is. Anyways, I will let you go. This will end up on the podcast also. I got to go put my son to bed. And yeah, we'll do this again. I'll text you. We'll make a plan a couple weeks or so. We'll hit up again.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
All right. Catch you later.
Bye.
The day is happier after the show.
That wasn't terrible.
That was pathetic. Boom.